You are listening to the podcast of the Matyas Corvinus Collegium, the largest talent management institute in Hungary. If you want to know more about our mission, please look up our English website at mcc.hu/en or check out our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter channels for interesting articles and analysis of our professors, external contributors, and students. Look up our knowledge base at corvinak.hu/en.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest installment of the MCC podcast. For this session, we are going to the land down under. But the land of Vegemite and the kangaroos has so much more potential, and this potential is very relevant for our topic today, which is nothing else but the very core of our society, the family. And about this topic, we have a very special guest coming all the way from Australia, the visiting fellow for the Matyas Corvinus Collegium, Simon Kennedy. Thank you very much for being here with us, Simon.
Thank you for having me, Ben, sir.
And as I would like to start a topic of family, I think the first question is pretty much the obvious one. What was it like growing up in an Australian family for you?
Growing up in an Australian family for me was a happy experience. Australia is a peaceful country. It's a long way away from all the troubles of the world. It doesn't have any land borders with any country. It can have very nice weather depending on where you're living. And so growing up in an Australian family for me was a stable experience. My parents are still married. They were married when I was growing up. And so it was a good time. The education system in Australia was still pretty good when I was at school back in the 90s. And the early 2000s. So, yeah, it was a good place to grow up. I did eat a lot of Vegemite growing up, and I haven't found any in Hungary as yet, which has been a sore point for my children. They are missing it.
At least I will be able to present you with this gift as I told you about this shop, so at least I can give you some proper Hungarian-Australian gift for you.
Sounds good.
And as we think about the policy side of how the governments in Australia tried to form the family structure, what was the Australian government thinking about family policies in the 20th century?
Yeah, the main family-related policy change that occurred in the 20th century, and I think this happened across the Western world, was the legalization of no-fault divorce. So in the early 1970s, a famous or infamous prime minister, depending on your opinion of him, named Gough Whitlam, implemented the policy into law of no-fault divorce. This was wasn't an unusual thing to do at the time, if you take into consideration lots of other countries that are similar to Australia. But that's a significant shift, I think, in the way that Australians not only viewed the family, but the way that the family structure was then changed after no-fault divorce. There were a lot more divorces in Australia after that, which makes sense because that was the whole point of the law. And so today, I think it's around 50%, it might be more than 50% of marriages end in divorce in Australia. I think it's a similar statistic in Hungary. I'm not exactly sure what the statistics are, but that was a major shift. And then there have always been family support payments of one kind or another, but they didn't really become as significant a policy until after the year 2000.
And as we move on to the 21st century, first, my main question would be what societal changes occurred and how did the Australian government try to adapt to these societal changes? So what was the 21st century like?
Yeah. If you look at...
What is it like? Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Sure. If you look across the world, since the 1980s, there's been a huge demographic decline. So Australia is part of that picture. Almost every country in the world has had demographic decline. There are exceptions, particularly parts of Africa, but Australia's demography has declined in terms of fertility rates. That is the number of children that are born to mothers who can have children, that's declined significantly, and this is a worldwide trend. And so there are some studies that have been done on demography which show that by the middle of this century, world population will actually peak and then it will decline after that. And so this is part of the picture for Australia as well. So this is a big challenge. This has been a big challenge for Australia. It was viewed as a challenge by the Conservative Howard government, which was the coalition government of what's called the Liberal Party in Australia, which is very confusing, but that's actually the name of the main Conservative Party in Australia. And then there's the National Party, which is sort of a country farmers party. And so those two formed a coalition, and they have for a long time, but they formed a coalition government in 1996. And after 2000, they were in power for 11 years until 2007. In the middle of that period, the government decided that they needed to try to find a way with policy to arrest this decline in fertility rates.
It's so alarming that even the hospital cars are just going around here.
They're coming for us.
They're coming for us. We have to take this topic very, very seriously.
Yes.
Because we're talking about the family.
It's, that's right.
It's essential.
Yeah, it is. It is. So the government in 2002 introduced what's called the baby bonus. So if I get my statistics correct, the year 2000, the birth rate in Australia was just below 1.8. So replacement level is 2.1, which means that everyone is basically just sort of maintaining, is contributing to maintaining the same population level. If you drop below 2.1 babies per woman, then population is declining unless you top it up with immigration. So this is the more standard approach to arresting fertility problems, which is in the West. They bring in immigrants. And so Australia does this in quite a big way. Australia is, interestingly, as you're probably aware, Benser, is known for having very tough border policies. So we don't let illegal immigrants in very easily. But for years and years, we've let in a lot of illegal migrants. And that's been the typical way that we've managed population growth. But the Howard government decided that they knew that something needed to be done about birth rates, and so this level of hovering between 1.8 and 1.7 is below replacement. In 2002, they implemented the baby bonus, and there's this famous photo of the treasurer, which is like the main finance minister in Australia, Peter Costello, with all of these babies. A photo opportunity, classic politics photo opportunity of Peter Costello with all these babies around him, these newborn babies in Melbourne, in the city of Melbourne around him. And it's hilarious because he looks completely uncomfortable, and so do all the babies. They all look sort of terrified. But that was the photo op to announce that they were going to pay families who had children basically a cash payment. They called it a tax benefit, but really it was a cash payment of now I've got to qualify what I say here because I've got to think about what the amount was. I think it was $3,000 Australian, which is something like 2,000 euros. So let's just sort of put it in those terms. Every time you have a baby, you get $3,000 Australian dollars in your bank account. And you can spend it on whatever you like. They don't check what you spend it on. And what happened was once this policy was implemented, birth rates went up to almost 2. So over the following, say, 5 years, birth rates went very close to replacement level. And so there have been studies done which showed that this worked in Australia, this policy of just giving people money when they had babies actually did change the birth rate significantly. And so this worked, but then when the policy was discarded by a future government, birth rates have now declined since then.
And do you see that now the new Australian person, I mean the Australian person in 2023, would imagine his or her life in a family of three, in a family of four, or that's already something that they wouldn't associate themselves with?
Mm. They probably imagine themselves in a family of three or four. I mean, that's the average. The birth rate now in Australia is the same as what it is in Hungary. So it's about around 1.6 or 1.7.
Okay.
And so the average family has between one and two children.
Okay.
Some families are obviously bigger and some are smaller. But, yeah, I think most people would imagine themselves as part of a normal family would be one or two children. Yeah. And so this is normal family life. I have five children and
they're very productive.
Yeah. that's one way of putting it. Yeah, that's right. We get all kinds of, actually in Hungary, I should say in Hungary, since we've been here, because I'm here with my family and we've been here for a couple of months, we get lovely, lovely comments from people in Hungary all the time. They say congratulations, and they're just they think it's fantastic. We have all these children. In Australia, we get more rude comments, like, you know, there's a way of stopping that from happening, and these kinds of comments about, you know, like, you're allowed to stop having children. Why don't you use contraception or whatever? You know, like these kind of rude comments. And so it's interesting to note that there is a cultural difference here, and that's noticeable to us, because I think that Hungary feels more positive about having children. Australia feels more negative about it in general. But that's anecdotal, but it's actually, we have a pretty strong, I feel like if we gathered the data, there'd be a pretty strong case to say that what I've described is true.
And now that you mentioned Hungary, it's my duty to ask this from your analytical point of view. How do you evaluate the approach that we Hungarians take to family policy? What is something that was striking to you?
When what I described to you earlier about the Australian policy platform was quite simple. So there's just this simple, it's no longer in place, by the way, this baby bonus, but it worked and it was...
When did it stop?
It stopped in 2013.
Okay.
Oh, 2013, I'm pretty sure, yeah. Sorry, my facts are a little bit muddled, but it was around then. And since then there's been a decline in birth rates. There's also, I guess before I go on, there's also a thing called the family tax benefit, which is, again, a sort of a payment from the government to families which goes up or down depending on how many children you have and how old they are. This family tax benefit is meant to, I think was designed to encourage people to have more children, but now it doesn't really work like that because everyone gets it who has children, and it's just sort of part of people's, it's almost part of people's income. So it doesn't really feel like it changes behaviour. It's probably just more, it's a helpful support, financial support, but it doesn't change behaviour, whereas I think the baby bonus genuinely changed people's aspirations for children. In Hungary, the reason why I mentioned those two things is that's probably the extent of what we would call family policy in Australia. It has been anyway. In Hungary, it's a lot more complex, and the Fidesz government is and has implemented a lot of different and interesting policies to try and encourage people to have more children. There are payments for people to get who, when they first get married, they get payments every month for 24 months, you know, 5,000 forints or something around that. There's tax allowances for married couples with children, and they get significant benefits and payments if they have children. Women who have lots of children eventually don't have to pay any income tax once they have four children. And I think that's eventually going to become three children at some point, that anyone who has three or more children won't have to pay income tax. These are just examples. There are, so obviously the CHOC program, which is designed to help people expand their home or buy a new home. And that's related to what some people call car seat economics, which is, it's one thing to say, here's some money to help you raise your children and pay for them. It's another thing to say, actually, our car just doesn't fit any more car seats in it. We have a five-seat sedan, which is what, you know, a lot of people will drive a five-seat sedan. Well, how can we have a fourth child under seven? Because we need four car seats. There aren't enough seats in the car. So I guess that the idea of the CHOC program is to try and encourage, because it also works for cars. You can buy new cars with the money. So the idea is you actually help people to change their practical circumstances and their physical surroundings so that they can fit more children into their car, fit more children into their homes. That's, I guess, working with that way of thinking about what are the barriers to people having children. So there are a range of different and quite complex incentives that the Fidesz government has built into the tax system. There are payments. There are huge incentives for people to get married and stay married, interestingly, and that has made a sizable difference. I mean, if you look at the change in Hungary in the number of divorces since 2010, which is when these policies have been implemented. In 2010, there were almost 24,000 divorces in Hungary. By 2020, there were only 15,000. So that's a really big drop. You know, it's a significant percentage drop. It's gone back up in 2021. It'd be interesting to know why that is. It's gone back up to 18,000. Maybe it's something to do with the
COVID made
the
people
pandemic.
Stay together.
Yeah. Exactly. They had to stay in the same place, and that can be challenging. But interestingly, as well, the number of marriages has more than doubled. So since 2010, when there were 35,500 marriages in Hungary, by 2021 there were 72,000 marriages. Which is, again, this is like a 110% increase in the number of marriages. It's quite an incredible increase. And that I think that has to be put down to these policies, which are incentivizing people staying together or getting married in the first place, because some of these payments, some of these benefits are attached to people who are married. You can't get them if you're not married legally. And you have to stay married to keep getting them or to not have to pay them back as a debt, for example. So that seems to be working, and that the fertility rate has gone up in Hungary. It seems to have worked to an extent. So it was 1.3 in the year 2000. In 2010, it was even lower. It was close to 1.2, and now it's about 1.6. The goal of the Fidesz government is to get it up to replacement rate by 2030, and the question is, will they get there? There's been some progress.
And here comes the question where I'm 24 years old, so I'm already close to the productive age.
You should already be married, Benson.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You have to become the ideal version of yourself, and you have to take the extra steps. I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm trying to take these steps.
That's good. That's good.
Yes, there are policies that encourage us to be more conscious about our family lives, but what I see in 2023, societies themselves have changed significantly to the point where policies are guidelines to properly guiding us into where we should be or where we could be. But do you think that our cultures, just like in Australia or here in Hungary, can policies truly bring change to us if we don't want change to happen with us?
Yeah, that's a really helpful way of framing the problem, because I think policies are limited in what they can achieve. Policies can change behaviour, and they do. And so if you incentivise a certain behaviour with cash or with tax benefits, yep, people will tend to play along with that. Just the same as when you make a law that makes something illegal, people will tend to not do that activity because they don't want to get a fine or they don't want to get put in jail. But the issue of having more children, having larger families, is not just a policy thing and it's not just a law thing. It's actually related to culture, and it's potentially even related to spirituality and deeper questions about what life is about. So the issues aren't just economic and political. That's my view. So I guess I would have the same question as you. How much can these policies achieve? It's not that these policies aren't important. I mean, I think family policy is very important. And if you ask me, population decline and fertility decline is one of the biggest challenges facing policymakers in the next 100 years. I mean, if you have population decline and fertility decline worldwide, let alone in one country, you are going to have economic destabilization, you're going to have potentially economic chaos, which leads to civic and civil unrest and potentially war and so on. This is a very big problem for policymakers. In the West, though, I wonder whether policymakers actually can't do that much. They might be able to do something, and I think that the examples of Hungary and Australia show that things can be done to encourage people to have more children, but how many more children can they encourage people to have? Ross Douthat, who's a columnist at the New York Times, wrote a really helpful and interesting article in Plough magazine a couple of years ago, where he talked about this problem of why people don't necessarily want to have more children, and he was talking about some family policy issues. And he talked about three reasons why people might not have children despite policy changes. And one is that that people actually just aren't people of the opposite sex, because you need two people of different sexes to have children. People of the opposite
sex. So controversial.
Yeah, I know it is, and we're smiling when we say it, but it's true. You definitely do. People actually aren't connecting in the same way they used to. Men and women aren't connecting in the same way they used to, partly because of our economy, partly because of the sexual revolution, and partly because of the advent of social media. It's interesting that there's actually less contact between people generally, and that means there's less potential romantic contact between the sexes. So that's one thing that actually can prevent people from connecting and then starting relationships and so on. The second one is he raises is prosperity. So he says that rich societies offer people a lot of enjoyment and pleasure. They can go on holidays. They can have lots of nice things. They can create a nice life, comfortable life for themselves. And, I mean, I see that particularly in Australia. Australia is a very wealthy country, and I have heard people explicitly say to me, we don't want to have more children because then we can't go on holidays as often.
That is at least an honest way of saying
it. Yeah, they were honest. And I don't hold it against them in one sense because I think they were honest, they're being transparent about it. But I'm just pointing that out as an example to say this is actually a really interesting and kind of strange barrier to people having more children. So if you have higher standards of living, you actually are less likely to compromise those standards of living by having more children because children are expensive. That's what we're told anyway. Children are inconvenient for your overseas holidays. You have to keep feeding them and buying them new clothes and they actually require a lot of attention and care. And so they stop you from having a nice time, you know, in terms of in the way that we think we have to have a nice time, right? We have nice holidays and nice things. So there's the issue of, I guess, people connecting. There's the issue of prosperity. That's actually, even though we have more money and we have bigger houses and we maybe not in Hungary, I don't know, but in Australia certainly we have more money, bigger houses, less children. The final one is an interesting one, and Douthat says that secularization or the sort of the decline of religion is another factor. He suggests that religious people are more motivated to have more children. So if you believe that your God requires, like Christianity actually has built into it the belief that God requires us to have children, and it says in Genesis, you know, we fill the earth, multiply, and then we go out and create culture. If you don't believe that, if you don't believe that there's a divine mandate to have families, then people are less likely to go and do that. So I think these are really interesting observations, and these aren't things that policies can necessarily solve. These aren't problems that policies can fix.
I guess on a final note, one personal question. When did you see that you are ready to have kids? Of course, you had to find a partner, but what was the point where you said, okay, now I'm mature enough or I feel ready to create a family?
Well, I thought I was. So I got married when I was 24. That's partly why I was joking that you should get married.
I feel more frustrated.
But
put a pressure on me.
No, but I am joking, Vincer. It's okay. We didn't have children immediately. We waited for a few years. And so I started having children. I think we started having children 3 years after we got married. And as soon as I had my first child, I said, why did we wait? Why did we wait? Let's have more kids and let's like have lots of kids. You know what I mean? Let's get into it because it was wonderful. It's an amazing experience and a wonderful responsibility. It's a big responsibility, but I think it changes you in a positive way. And I think that we're, you know, as human beings, we're made to take on that responsibility and have children. And so I would suggest that I think once you're married, you're ready to have kids. That's the right time to have children because you're in a stable relationship with someone. You have responsibilities and duties to your spouse, and that is the exactly the right environment in which to welcome other people into the family. And so I think that's the right time to start having children. There are no rules to this, by the way. I mean, I wouldn't suggest for a second that people have to start having children on their honeymoon. Like that's not what I'm arguing, but I am suggesting that would make sense. I think if you're mature enough to get married, you're mature enough to start having children.
That's the positive note I wanted to leave the conversation with. Simon, thank you very much for being here with us today.
It's been a pleasure, Benza. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this MCC podcast episode. For further media content, please look up our English website at mcc.hu/en or look for us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you want to read more by our professors, external contributors, and students, check out our knowledge base at corvinec.hu/en.